This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for Vermont Public Radio. This podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. State health officials say the next few weeks will be a critical time in the effort to slow down the spread of the coronavirus. They say there's evidence that many Vermonters followed their advice and held very small Thanksgiving events. Governor Phil Scott says he's hoping that these trends will continue through the rest of the year.
It's too early, however, to know exactly how many people kept their Thanksgiving get-togethers small and what impact holiday travel will have. But with this initial data and the lower in daily cases we're seeing, I'm feeling cautiously optimistic.
The first COVID-19 vaccines are scheduled to be distributed in Vermont on a very limited basis in less than 3 weeks. It's believed that most people will have access to these vaccines by the middle of April. Does this situation make it easier to endure the restrictions that have been put into place in the last few months? Today on Vermont Edition, Mitch Wortlieb and I would like to get your thoughts about this question and hear about other ways that you've learned to survive during this pandemic. Mitch, great to have you back.
Bob, it is great to be with you. Thank you so much.
Mitch, it seems that almost every day now there's some promising news about one or more of the three vaccines that are currently under development. It's clear that Governor Phil Scott sees the progress on developing a vaccine as a major step in dealing with this pandemic.
And we continue to have good news on that front as well. Our teams are ready for their first shipment of vaccine whenever those are distributed by the federal government. I share all of this because even when we face some of the toughest challenges since March, there is reason to be optimistic. And there is reason to see light at the end of the tunnel.
So, Mitch, with the speed that these vaccines are being developed, how do you think it's affecting your outlook on dealing with the pandemic?
You know, I think it's pretty important, Bob, because while there are still lots of unknowns, and one of the biggest unknowns is whether people will actually take that vaccine once it becomes widely available. And, of course, first healthcare workers will be taken care of, and I think after that, we're going to be looking at some of the most vulnerable members of our society who will need to take that vaccine. But you hope that people will take it, and you're going to have people doing that for it to be effective. I do think that, you know, hearing about the good news so far in these test trials from the different vaccines that have come out with, you know, effectiveness rates that are well over 90% has got to be some good news because we, you know, paradoxically, we're getting into the winter months now and we know that it gets dark, it gets cold. You know, we're already at that point now where it starts to get dark around 4 o'clock or so, 4:30. And, you know, that has an effect on us even when it's not pandemic times. And people, some people don't look forward to the winter, but knowing that these vaccines are coming to me makes it feel like, let's get through that dark period. Let's kind of pretend that we're bears and we're about to go into hibernation. You know, we're going to go into that cave. We're going to get the rest we need. We're going to get some sleep, take care of ourselves, and we're going to come out. It's going to be brighter. There's going to be this thing to look forward to, which is all of us being protected finally. At least that's the way I'm looking at it.
Mitch, I wonder if your feeling is somewhat like mine. There are times when I have a less than optimistic point of view and I think, you know, how long has this been? It's been since the middle of March.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I have a hard time remembering what day it is and how our lives have been turned upside down. And I think for a moment, what if this was the reality of going forward with no vaccine? And it quickly snaps me back into there is light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. There is going to be a time when we come back to normal. Now, the new normal may not be what we had back earlier this year, but it's going to be different than where we are right now.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something to really keep in mind because, you know, when we do these programs, Bob, we want people to share your joy. I think you mentioned that, you know, in the introduction here and tell us the things that you're doing that are helping, that are making things better. But we're realistic, too, and we understand that the numbers that are coming out are so dispiriting. I mean, I think I heard today that, you know, it's been like the equivalent of a 9/11, losing that many people per day now. And the numbers are staggering and they're horrifying when you think about them in that context. All of that being said, knowing that the science is there to have produced these vaccines in about an 8-month period is incredible. It is remarkable. We are in a time where our scientific advancements have come to the point where we can come up with these things. I think that's something we must remember as well. You know, it is awful what's going on with this virus, but the fact that we're able to bring a vaccine to this point and get it to where we are confident and health officials are confident that it is going to come out and help, you know, 90% efficiency or more, that is something to celebrate. That is something to look forward to. And I think it is also an incentive for us to do the things we need to do to stay safe until that vaccine is, in fact, available.
Today in the program, we're looking at ways, coping mechanisms for the pandemic, things that have helped you get through. We'd love to hear from you today. 1-800-639-2211 is our phone number. Some folks also called in and left some recorded messages. Here's one from Liza in Claremont, New Hampshire, who says a specific style of dancing is helping her get through the pandemic.
I am doing all right. And one of the ways that I am maintaining that status is belly dancing. I know that sounds weird, but you absolutely cannot fail to be cheerful when you've got jingling coins on your hips. So belly dancing once a week is what I recommend for one and all. Just like blowing bubbles, it is an inherently happy activity.
That's fantastic.
Mitch, I think we have a new idea for you.
I would love to try that, honestly. Belly dancing, from what I have heard, is not only just something that can produce joy. It's really great exercise as well. You're moving your body in ways that, you know, make it feel alive. You're getting that blood flowing. I'm all for it. And don't think I won't try it someday, Bob. I just might.
Would we have a video?
Bob, I said I would try it one day. I didn't say that I would video myself doing that and then put it out there for everybody to laugh at throughout the winter. No, I don't think so.
Well, it could be a moment of joy for a lot of people, Mitch.
One person's joy, Bob, is another person's sorrow. Let's put it that way.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Connie in Bridgewater. Hi, Connie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say that I've been working on my Christmas cards the past week. And, yeah, as I do them, I just remember why I am grateful for each individual that I'm writing to. And I write it to them, and it just is making me feel wonderful because I have all these amazing people in my life that I love. And I hope on the other end, when they receive it, they'll feel grateful as well. And it's just something simple that you can do that reminds you, you know, why the people in your life are important.
Connie, I think I probably know the answer to this, but are your Christmas cards very different this year, or are you just kind of sending out the same message and that's just making you feel good? Or have you changed it to reflect what's going on these days?
Yeah, no, they are different, and they're just more meaningful because, you know, who knows the next time I'll see these people. They live all over the country and all over the world, and it's just, it's a different year, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's a lovely way to reach out. I think that sounds great. Thank you.
That is great, Connie. And Mitch, it makes me think about, as we see different articles talking about coping mechanisms, gratitude is a concept that comes up over and over again. And gratitude, even for some very small things, can make you feel really good.
When you tell people that you appreciate them, and it can be anyone, it can be people that you don't even know very well, it actually does make you feel good. One of the things that we did in our household, actually back when this all kind of first started, a couple of months into it, was to put up some signs outside our mailbox there and let them know, the mail delivery folks, that we really appreciate them just doing what they do, which is to do their job every day and to come and bring us the mail. And, you know, even these days, a lot of people don't get a lot of regular snail mail. Maybe you're getting mostly catalogs. But you do get cards like Connie is sending out, the Christmas cards to folks. And just to let them know that, you know, we know you're still out there. You're still doing your jobs. And this goes for folks who are working at gas stations and convenience stores and the supermarkets, of course. Everybody who's still just been doing what they normally do, let them know how much you appreciate it. It'll make them feel good. And I guarantee you, it'll make you feel really good as well.
That's a great idea. Let's talk to Cindy, who's calling from South Burlington. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
I'm so glad you have this segment on. I was going to reiterate what Bonnie said, which is gratitude. I know when I got sober over 15 years ago, one of the best things that I still use from my sponsor telling me over and over again is to move your feet, change your seat. So if, you know, you deal with anxiety or depression or you just really are in a funk, I highly suggest getting up, putting your coat on, and even if it's a five-minute walk, just breathe in the air. That always helps me. And then the other thing I've been doing recently is going downtown, wherever anyone lives, and buying like $3 gift certificates and handing them out to homeless people. And the gratitude that they show, not just for a hot cup of coffee, but for being seen, is just so heartwarming. I wish I could give more, but I suggest everyone who can give anything really try and do it this year. So many people are suffering who are homeless.
Cindy, that's really nice. Thank you very much for letting us know about that strategy. Again, it's about the gratitude. And, you know, I think Cindy's touching on something there, too, because we got this email from Carla who says, I am a clinical social worker supporting a large number of Vermonters who are making their way through this pandemic in almost total isolation. These are folks who either have no family and intimate relationships or who are separated from their loved ones because of risk factors. Can you please speak to the epidemic of loneliness experienced by too many Vermonters? That email from Carla. And, you know, I think that that's reflecting what Cindy's talking about. When you do hand out, you know, a coupon for a cup of coffee for someone who's homeless, and, of course, you're doing this and wearing masks, I'm assuming, and, you know, trying to stay as safe as possible, that person's gratitude is going to be something that you're going to carry with you throughout the day. And there are so many folks, Bob, who are isolated. I hope that we're speaking to them now. I hope they're hearing our voices and the voices of all those who are going to call in and send us their messages today. And know that even if you're not experiencing it right now, someone is out there thinking of you. And you are part of this entire historic moment with all of us. We are really all this in this together. As trite as that can sound sometimes, it's actually true. And if you can just reach out to one person during these next couple of months, especially, who feels isolated and alone, it's going to make a huge difference in their lives and your own too.
That's great advice, Mitch. Let's turn to Amanda in Montpelier. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, one thing that I do, can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Sure can.
I pick up trash, which is really infectious and joyous. If you just pick up trash, it's very fun. And also saying hi to everyone you see, because sometimes with our masks, we don't do that. And then after the Vermont Lights Away of last Friday from Governor Scott, I'm like decorating our house. And then can I read you my little poem? I love William Carlos Williams.
Yeah.
It's short. It's very short. So. So much depends upon a soft light shining from our warm homes together beside neighbors.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, we did. What's the title of that poem?
Well, it's so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow.
Yes,
it's just on that, because I did it for my dog. I said so much depends upon a dog barking, because my dog barks.
Oh, yeah, so does mine. I can relate very well to that, Amanda. Thank you. So much to touch on there. First of all, picking up trash, unbelievable. What a great idea, because you know what? That feels really good, too. I know it seems utterly too simple, but when you are I do this sometimes when I'm walking in the woods with my dog, which is something we've talked about, Bob, that I do daily to just keep me sane and healthy. And, you know, eventually, you know, you will see some cigarette butts or something, or just, you know, something that paper wrapper or potato chip, you know, bag or something on the ground. If you are able to, with gloves on, pick that up, take it out, put it in the trash, you're going to feel great about doing that. And it's a simple little thing to do. But also reading poetry and, you know, getting up, moving your seat, like we heard before from Cindy, all that stuff. Little things in accumulation are going to add up to really improving your mental state of mind.
Mitch, I read an article this week that talked about setting realistic expectations, and Cindy's phone call earlier about taking a walk, and maybe it's a 5-minute walk, and you do this with your dog, and maybe it's a 15-minute walk. Who knows? Maybe you go out for an hour walk, but the idea is that you're just out and walking and you're setting realistic expectations. And it came across with that old saying, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Which we hear a lot in politics when they're discussing different compromises in the state house or down in Washington. So yesterday I decided to Google that. I was wondering, where did that come from? And it turns out that it comes from Voltaire, who said, the best is the enemy of the good. Confucius also said, better a diamond with a flaw than a pebble without. And then there's William Shakespeare. Striving to better, oft we mar what's well. Something to keep in mind that, giving ourselves a little bit of a break and saying, I'm going to try to do this. I'm going to do it for that long. Here's some goals I'm setting for myself in whatever activity it happens to be. And if for some reason you don't quite reach those goals, hey, tomorrow is another day. Sort of giving yourself a break really seems to be very helpful to a lot of people.
That's exactly right, because you know what? Poe Buddy's nerfect. I mean, that's what it reminds me of, to put it in a much more crude way than those wonderful examples you gave us, Bob, from Voltaire, Confucius, and Shakespeare. It's true. Don't, if you can't take that hour hike, okay, you can't do it. I do go through this every day. Sometimes I really like to be out there for an hour, with the dog, and I come back and feeling like I did a real workout, and it just feels great. Other days, I just don't have it in me. I'm tired. And just taking that walk around the block instead, doing 15 minutes, like you said, it's still better than nothing. I don't have to be perfect. I just have to do a little something to change my perspective. And it does bring to mind, as we talk about writing and reading, other great things to do, I think, Bob. There's a writer who I've admired for years named Tim Robbins. He wrote a number of great books, Jitterbug Perfume among them, Skinny Legs and All, and many others. And he had this very simple line in one of his books. It might have been Jitterbug Perfume, which has always stood with me. And it's so simple. And he said, he says, things can be changed by the way you look at them. And that sounds very simple. But what he's saying is, if you're caught in a loop of telling yourself everything's bad, this is no good, everything's going wrong, try to change just the perspective of how you're looking at the thing. I couldn't take my hour-long walk with the dog today, but you know what? I did 15 minutes instead. I took a different route. I did something different. Just that little change will jolt you out of that mindset where you're going into sometimes a spiral that's just no good. I just think it's always stuck with me. I hope maybe it can stick with somebody else. And also read as much as you can. Novels especially are my favorite.
Absolutely. I mean, I sort of applied this to myself this week, Mitch. I've been trying to work out 4 times a week because I find it really helps my stress levels. I also read when I'm on a Stairmaster, and I really enjoy doing that. I've been reading a whole bunch since the pandemic. I think I've read more books in the last 9 months than I had in the previous 9 years. And the idea of, well, last week I didn't make that goal. I made 3. It wasn't 4, right? So am I going to beat myself up and say, come on, Bob, get with it? Or is it going to be, hey, well, 3 is better than 2. And I read somewhere that the hardest thing before you work out or go for a walk or exercise is simply putting on your exercise clothes. Once you've done that, once you've put on your jacket to go outside walking, you're on your way. So it's not the act itself that is so difficult to do. It's just the preparation for it and the mental preparation for it. And once you've done that, you're off and running.
Yeah, it's that first step. It's that changing the way you look at things. And maybe it's by putting on that one item of clothing that gets you moving a little bit. I think that's great.
We heard from Rachel in Westminster in one of our voicemails, and Rachel is using her time and energy to give back to her community.
The thing that I found the most helpful over the summer, and what I'll continue with, is this summer I was able to be greening with the Vermont Food Bank program through the Brattleboro Food, Vermont Food Bank. It gave me an opportunity to be outside and doing something physical and active, but also to be able to be with a group of other people. It was safe outside. We were far apart from each other and had all the precautions in place, but we were able to chat and get, you know, some opportunity to really feel like we were doing a neighborly thing together.
Oh, I love that. You know, again, reaching out and helping others, that's really something that, you know, everybody can do. And not everybody is always able to do that. But if you can, it's going to make you feel amazing. And I really appreciate that, Rachel, that you're sharing your community service with the rest of us. It's something, too, that it reminds me, Bob, when I was speaking recently with John Sales from the Vermont Food Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about, you know, I asked him, what can people do? And he said, you know, right now we do need donations. Financial help is the biggest thing they can do. But he realizes, of course, especially now, a lot of people don't have the means to give financially. But they always need volunteers. And there are ways that you can help, whether it's delivering meals to people or maybe just, you know, stacking some things and getting things done, perhaps even with mailing, things like that. I would encourage people to, if you can't contribute financially or in other ways, give a call to community organizations that might need help and say, I can help. I can't help financially right now, but I can do X, Y, or Z. And I guarantee you somebody's going to say, thank you, and here's what you can do right now.
Mitch, we've got a lot of folks who've got some ideas they'd like to share with us today. So let's go to Pamela, who is calling from Dorset. Hi, Pamela. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. One of the things I've been doing since March is making masks. I've made and donated over 3,000 masks so far.
Wow.
And I'm it's not a big deal. Gives me something to keep me occupied. I'm the district governor for Vermont Lions, and I will tell you that Lions clubs all over the state have been doing food drives, making masks, making blankets for children, and we just keep ourselves busy, and that's the way. And we've learned to Zoom, which is pretty amazing for us old people.
And that's amazing for me, too. I can't, you know, do you like the Zoom? I'm not crazy about it, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, I love it because you get face-to-face and we all get to chat because we're very social creatures, us Lions. Very social.
Very good for you. That's
so our meetings are canceled. Our things are canceled, but we can be together in another way. And we're all, like, we had a Zoom where we were all sewing masks. We had a Zoom where we were sewing blankets. We had a Zoom, you know.
Wow.
That's what we do.
That's great, Pamela.
I love it.
Yeah. You know, Mitch, we all live in a Zoom world now.
Afraid so, yeah.
It's hard to imagine, you know, going back to the beginning of the year when we didn't Zoom that often. And I have to admit, it took me a little while to get used to it. But over Thanksgiving, I had an opportunity to have sort of a group Zoom with my children and grandchildren. And it was delightful. I mean, I think everybody was used to the technology at that point, and it wasn't quite the same as having them in the room and giving them a hug, but you could feel their presence, their laughter, their joy. And I realized, well, I'm starting to get used to this technology. I don't want to get too used to it, and that's my only opportunity. But I realized this, you know, this was really better than nothing.
I think, too, Bob, that the difference might be that, you know, that was a moment. It was sort of it was not a work Zoom, let's put it that way. You're talking about your relatives and people that you love. And I think there may be the informality of that is great. And, you know, I'm coming around to it a little bit, too. And you're right. We are in a Zoom world right now. This is the only way we really can safely be connected. I guess it's just more of that official thing, you know, where you're in a big meeting and, you know, we're all sort of supposed to look, you know, as though there's not a global pandemic going on. And that could be a little difficult. But even then, I think people are understanding that this is new technology to a lot of us and that it's a little bit weird and it does take some getting used to. And I have not met anybody on a Zoom call yet who hasn't understood that and, you know, has given me a break, basically, for not automatically getting it.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Christina, who is calling from Williston. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to say that a lot of us parents are home with our kids right now. My wife and I are every single night working on a curriculum for our four-year-old. And one thing we're doing is reminding her that it's not all about her as she's being taught just by herself, that she has an opportunity to help others. She's learning to count now, but pre-kindergarten, and so we're going to be buying some canned goods and other shelf-stable items, and she'll count them into paper bags, and we'll do a little field trip to the food bank. So just a tip for parents to think about ways to include that as they're planning their days for their kids.
Oh, that's really nice, Christina. And how is your four-year-old dealing with this overall? Does she express some concerns to you, fears, or is she still trying to just, you know, wrap her brain around all this?
She's doing well. She's very much more social than either of us, and so she's missing her friends.
I know exactly how that feels. That sounds like my 12-year-old, who is just such a social animal. And, I can very much appreciate that. I'm glad that that's working out for you.
Great idea, Christina. Let's turn to Bob in Barrie. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. A long time ago, I started a program. I was working with the HIV and AIDS programs, and a lot of the people that I was working with knew they were going to be dying because that was when it was a death sentence, pretty much. And I started a program called Legacy, and what it does, and I've been using this with teenagers, with programs, with different individuals and whatnot. And what it does is it gives you an opportunity to create the legacy that you want to leave. So the first question would be, if you were to die today or disappear today, how would you be remembered? And you kind of explore that. And the second question is, how would you like to be remembered? Mm. And then the third question is, what is it do you need to do or not do or include or not include in your life to create the legacy that you want to leave? And I've done this with a bunch of teenagers. Seniors in a couple of schools. And one of the things that they told me was they didn't want to be like a number or just like, you know, the class of. They wanted to be, you know, the class that did what. And, you know, when I did the program with them, they were just absolutely amazing. And they did all these things for other people mostly. And what I found was that really kind of solidified their whole being in the school and gave them a reason to be there and graduate, and it was really spectacular. So it's something I'm very dear. It's near and dear to my heart, and I just thought I'd share it.
Wow, that's pretty cool, Bob. Thank you very much for sharing that, because I do think too often, you know, we live in this world now, and Bob, you were just talking about this, where we are in this Zoom world, we're in this world of instant technology, things like Twitter and Facebook, even other social media. You can be tempted to do something quickly, and perhaps something you see angers you and you immediately shoot off an angry comment back. Instead, it sounds like what Bob is talking about is taking that longer view and saying, wait a second, what do I want to say mm-hmm. here? Do I want to be remembered for my initial reaction of anger right now? And what's that going to do? What kind of, you know, chain effect is that going to have? Or do I want to sit and think about this and think about my response, maybe not respond at all, and come up with something that is going to make a better impact in the long term, and something that I can be proud of to look at a week down the line, 2 weeks down the line, or even longer. I think that's a wonderful thing to think about, just how we want to be remembered beyond the moment.
We also got a voicemail, Mitch, from Claire in Burlington, who says she brought a new pet home, opting for something with fins over a furrier new friend.
I decided it wasn't good to get a puppy, and that wasn't the best choice, so I went and got a baby betta fish, and that seems to have fit the bill, so would recommend. If you're staving off getting a puppy, the betta fish does really well.
Well, you don't have to walk the fish, number one. As far as I know, I've never owned a fish, but that's something that I got to say. You don't have to get out there when it's like 20 below and your fish is going to be fine. You know what? I think that sounds great, Claire. Anything, any kind of pet, doesn't matter if it's furry or scaly or a lizard or, you know, my daughter, this is incredible. I don't know how she does this. She showed me a video that a friend made of hers in school, because she is going to school in person a couple of days, and she helps out with this animal lab where they have these creatures and they have to feed them and take care of them. She let a tarantula, I mean, a
Ooh.
Big honking tarantula just crawl over her arm and hand. She's smiling the whole
time. Oh, I don't
think
so.
I know. That's what I said. But you know what? It brought her joy. So if a fish brings you joy, a tarantula, a snake, a bearded dragon, I don't care what it is, have that pet around. I'm all for it. All for it.
Mitch, one thing that I've talked with you about a couple of times is the idea of having a daily moment of joy. And it can last 5 seconds. It can last 5 minutes. And I just thought I'd share what some of my moments of joy are. And that's when I get either a picture or a short video, maybe 10 or 15 seconds, of one of my grandchildren. And they can be doing goofy things. They can be running around the house. But boy, for that time period and for a couple of minutes afterwards, I'm just so thankful to see them and seeing them out and about and doing things that it just really, it makes my day when I get one of those.
I'm glad you're having those moments of joy, Bob. And just letting me know those, that gives me a little bit of moment of joy. And I wonder, in just saying that, you know, if you, we talked before about folks who are facing isolation and, you know, who are not around others a lot. If you can reach out to one of those people, even if it's somebody, you know, you may be surprising them with a phone call and let them know what your moment of joy is, I think that they're going to take that and say, thank you for sharing that with me. And that's going to give them a moment of joy. And like you said, Bob, even if it's just a spark, even if it's just a few seconds, when you see those pictures or those videos of your grandkids, it moves something in you. And just for that moment of time, if it makes you feel better, then it has done so much more than that. It has gone so much further. And when we're talking about getting into these winter months where we're going to have long stretches of it's going to be cold and it's going to feel dark and things might feel like there's no light at the end there, those little moments all added up are going to create that string of light that's going to get us right through this. It's really going to work. And I'm just glad that you mentioned that today.
You know, and one other thing that's a little hard to do, but I find it's very worthwhile is, you know, as we go through life, we have good friends and then we lose track of people through life. And you think, well, I wonder what old Billy is up to these days. Haven't talked to Billy in over a year. Mm. This is a great time to call Billy and say, I'm just calling to see how you're doing and what's up and how you're coping with everything. And it can be a 5-minute phone call or a 10-minute phone call, but you're kind of reaching out to someone in your past who at one time, you know, someone who you knew fairly well, you considered to be a good friend. But unfortunately, as it often happens in life, you lose track of people. Making that phone call every once in a while can really get your spirit going and saying, wow, it's really great that I was able to connect with this old friend of mine again and remember some of the times that we had together.
It's very striking to me that you say that, Bob, because just today I heard from somebody over, you know, and it wasn't a phone call. It was LinkedIn, of all things. And I know people make jokes about that all the time, but it was somebody who I haven't seen since back in my high school days. And he was reminding me, hey, I saw your name come up and I was wondering if that's you. And you know, there aren't that many Wirtleaves out there, so it was, and we connected if only briefly. And I do think that having those connections is super important. And I want to let people know too that, you know, we read every email that we get here at VPR. We answer your phone calls. I even get phone calls sometimes from folks who want to remain anonymous. And there's a woman who's left some messages for me on the phone before, and she doesn't leave her name. She doesn't want to call back, but she wants to know. And she was talking about these programs, Bob, that you and I have been doing, how much she appreciates them. And she's hearing that. I want, if she's listening now, whoever you are, I want you to know I'm hearing you. I appreciate your phone calls so very much. And I'm so glad that you're listening. I do feel that we're all connected, whether we realize it or not.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Lindsay, who is calling from Colchester. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, on that note, I wanted to thank you all because you've all been definitely helping me feel not lonely during this period. It's definitely been pretty crazy. And I have a dog by my side, and I spent some time in the garden. And another point you made today that I love is just embracing mistakes. And I made a lot of mistakes in the garden, but I'm grateful because I feel like I've been able to learn so much more because of it.
Yeah, good for you. And how about that dog? I mean, is it as important? I have to talk about dogs, Allison.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, what's your dog's name, first of all? I need to know that.
Well, first of all, so I have two, actually. Oh. I'm very lucky. I had Annabelle before the pandemic, and my pandemic pup is named Nash.
Nash.
He's actually staring right now with longing eyes, and they keep me going, and I don't know what I would do without the dogs. That's for sure.
Well, give both your pups a little extra scratch on the belly from Bob and us and everybody listening. Thank you so much, Allison.
Let's talk to Rob, who's calling from Arlington. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks. How are you guys today? Sounds like you're busy. And again, express thanks for y'all for getting us through this pandemic. NPR has been amazing, and VPR's coverage is by far the best in the country, is from where I sit.
Wow. Thank you, Rob. That's really
nice.
Thank
you.
Appreciate that.
Well, you were just talking about dogs. I was like, well, I got my two Chihuahua pups finally sleeping here today, and our four cats are fed. So I wanted to relate, at least there's zero mice and chipmunk issues at our house. and they're importing them out from the woods. But speaking of that type of life, getting through all of this in the holidays, we actually had a discussion on our Zoom church a couple of weeks ago. And we have literature and we have things to guide us through this, because historically speaking, I mean, holiday things, especially Christmas specifically, has really only been with us for about 150 years, the way we think of it now. It was never a big holiday, really, until Dickens was asked to create a commercial holiday for Britain's economy. So when that happened, and it exploded here in the country around the 50s, we've lost sight of the fact that if we can go back to the Little House on the Prairie books, if we go back to the Waltons, some of the pre-Depression things, pre-war, pre-World War II especially, if we can go back to those things, Henry David Thoreau, all of the things from the late 18th century, that can get us through the holidays that are non-electronic, that are non-large gathering, that will help us. And if we get back to those things, I think maybe we'll get a more of a traditional Christmas feeling again, and lose the I have to buy and go shopping and Black Friday thing, and get back to the purpose of Christmas, which for various people means various different things, but it gets you through the winter.
That is so true, Rob, and I think that's an excellent point. We don't have to rely, you know, we talk a lot about shows that we binge watch and electronics, and everybody's, you know, diving into video games, and that's fine if that brings you a kind of joy and a distraction. All of that is great, but if we can do those things that are more hands-on and that were like in those Little House on the Prairie days, I think that's going to even bring a new sense of purpose and give you something to do that's going to carry you through those winter months. And to that point, Rob, we got this email from David, who writes, "We pared down our Thanksgiving celebration as per state guidelines after dinner. We decided to play some card games and board games, which culminated in a game called Hot Potato." And he says, "In this game, you throw around a toy potato, and the one holding it when the music goes off is the loser. I have not laughed that hard in a long time. It was a wonderful release of joy and fun during these strange times." So there you go, a toy potato. You toss it around. You know, you have some music playing. Whoever's holding on to it there, it's a little bit like musical chairs. That's it. You're a loser, and you keep going from there. Maybe that floats your boat. Maybe it doesn't. It sounds like fun to me, but it's something you can do, and you don't need electronics to enjoy it.
You know, Mitch, earlier we were talking about reading during the pandemic, something that has just been fabulous for me. I feel like I've just discovered a whole new world in reading. And one book that I read recently was called The Splendid and the Vile, which is really the first year of Winston Churchill being in charge as the Prime Minister of England in 1940. I think he comes in the spring of 1940, of course, as World War II is exploding everywhere. And there was, it made me think about sort of what we accept as a new normal. And there's a point for several months where the people in London are being bombed every night. So when they go to bed that night, they know they're going to hear the air raid sirens. They know they're going to get up. They're going to go down to the air raid shelters. They'll be there for a little while. They'll go back to their homes, back to the beds, try to get a little more sleep, get up and do it again. Mm. And to think of, you know, if that's your reality for 2 or 3 months, and maybe the most amazing thing was Winston Churchill going out in public every night and saying, come on, folks, we can deal with this. Let's get down to the shelter. We're going to get all through this, and we're just going to take this a day at a time. And I was thinking, it's been very, very difficult dealing with this pandemic. There's no question about it. But I think about what those people must have been thinking every night when they went to bed, knowing that the air raid sirens were going to go off and that London was going to be bombed.
Yeah, I mean, you have to put things in perspective. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's where the phrase keep calm, carry on, started to emerge. There were people that were going down there and trying so hard to maintain their daily routines that they were having. They were sipping tea. They're bringing their tea down into the air raid shelters underneath the ground there. And the bombs are going off. And they're just, you know, it's so very London in that old sense. But I do mm-hmm. think it's something to remember. There have been crises throughout human history, terrible ones. This is terrible. Not trying to make light of it. But we can get through this if we have that idea that we are in this together. We're going to make some sacrifices, but in the end, we're going to come out. We're going to come out from underground. We're going to come out from this pandemic, and we're going to be that much stronger for it.
Let's talk to Bob, who's calling from Braintree. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. My wife and I were both had COVID fairly early. I was in single digits to get it in the state. Mm. And Kathy, I gave it to my wife. And we were terrified. We live in a place where there's fairly little COVID. And at one point, our household had probably over 10% of the COVID cases in the state of Vermont were at our little house in Braintree. It was a terrifying time. But one of the things that, and I really appreciated the call that was just came in from Arlington, because it really resonates with what I've experienced with Kathy. She's a composer, my wife, and she's composed 25 chants, sat down at the piano and has composed 25 chants since she started feeling better, which was a while. And she's putting them up on her website under the name COVID Psalter, centering songs for uncertain times. Hmm. And I'm so proud of her. It's been so wonderful to just stand with her by the piano and sing these, and then to gather a few singers together like Mary Bonhag from Scrag Mountain, who's up there in East Montpelier and Plainfield area, and one at a time coming in and just adding their voices to these wonderful things. And there, we got a grant from the Vermont Council of the Arts, God bless them, and these songs are going to be put up online for people to use. And it just has been an inspiration to me to hear her working on this and to be able to sing with her.
Wow, Bob, that's incredible. If you can maybe send us some links so we can let folks know about that and hear those songs. I am very glad mostly that both you and your wife are recovered. I'm assuming that is the case now. But yeah, that must have been a scary moment for both of you. But, you know, writing songs, if you've got the creative bent, if you're a singer, or if you've never written or painted or drawn or sang something before or done belly dancing like we heard before, this is the time to try something new. This is the time to do it. And again, whatever can center you, like Bob was talking about, that just sounds like the right strategy to me.
Bob, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's get a quick call in from Lucy in Marshfield. Hi, Lucy. Welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you so much, and thanks for all that you're doing. There are a couple of tools, online tools. One's called Quarantine Chat, and the other is Dial-Up App. I actually haven't tried them myself yet, but someone else on another VPR program had suggested them, and they look intriguing. It's a way to connect random connections over the phone with strangers, and there's a New York Times article, phone calls with strangers can reintroduce random connections. connections into our lockdown lives and be a balm for loneliness and grief. So there you have it, quarantinechat.org and dialup.com.
Quarantinechat.org. Lucy, thank you so much for letting me know about that. That sounds amazing. Again, sometimes it's the simplest things. Okay, you know, we're trying to connect with people, strangers and what have you, and there's a way to do it. There's an app for that, as they like to say. So I think that's a fantastic thing. Bob, I want to quickly get in this message we got from Marcy, who wrote to us to say, your show today is bringing me joy, also the sun streaming through the windows, the warmth it brings, and the nice yarn I'm knitting a hat with brings Marcy joy. Well, Marcy, your little note brought me a little bit of joy, so thank you for letting us know.
It definitely brings us joy, Marcy. We really appreciate that. Mitch, tomorrow at the governor's press briefing, he's going to address high school sports guidelines. He's kind of taking it on a week-by-week basis. Right now, they've been delayed, I believe, until the end of January, or they've been put on hold. So we might get some information tomorrow about the future of high school winter sports. I know you're a big hockey fan. There are a lot of hockey players who would love to get back on the ice as soon as possible.
I want them to. I feel so bad for the high school athletes who are just, they can't wait to get out there. They're chomping at the bit. I do want it to be safe, though. And, you know, I think the governor is right there with that. That's why he's going week to week on this. You know, for anybody who's listened to the sports reports during Morning Edition, they know that I am completely against the NFL continuing their season. I think it's crazy. I don't think it's right. And I just think it's not the time. However, that being said, I do trust our healthcare officials to know what can be done safely and what can't. I think they're making the right decision now for erring on the side of caution. But we'll find out more tomorrow during that media briefing, which is at 11 o'clock. You can hear that live right here on VPR. And the governor should have an update on winter sports then.
Let me ask you a very quick question, sure. Mitch. You're a hockey player. Is it reasonable to ask hockey players to wear masks?
To have masks on, Bob? I'm sorry.
To have masks on while they're playing.
Yeah, you know, I think so. A lot of the high school college players wear the cages anyway, but that's not going to do anything. If they can, I think, you know, it's a kind of sport where you're breathing so heavily all the time for intense short bursts. If it's possible, I think, and if it's going to mitigate the potential for spread, then sure. But again, I'm leaving that up to the best healthcare officials, and they know better than I do if that's safe or not.
That's our program for today. Many thanks to Mitch Wortlieb, who every morning helps us wake up and provides us with the positive energy that many of us need to get through the day. Mitch, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Bob. It's great being with you.
I'm Bob Kinzel. Thanks for listening. Be safe, and most importantly, be kind.